All right, good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Old Time Dragnet Show. This is your host, Adam Graham. Thanking you so much for joining us here as we continue on with the episodes of Dragnet here. If you've got any comments on the show, feel free to email me, adam@adamsweb.us. Visit our blog, www.orble.com/dragnet-radio-show, or visit our online community, dragnetradio.ning.com. I got a couple emails I wanted to go ahead and get to. From Sandy Warren, first of all, she wrote, "Recently ran across your podcast and I'm really enjoying it. I grew up in the LA area and was an avid watcher of the 60s, 70s TV series. Thought I'd mention that there's a great book available on Dragnet. It's called My Name's Friday by Michael J. Haydee. You may already be aware of it. If not, you may want to get it for purposes of enriching your podcast commentary. It also gives a lot of background on Jack Webb. And that is definitely on one of my to-buy list, or maybe I could even get an interlibrary loan on it. It's been out a few years. Thanks for making the old radio shows available. It's amazing to hear that many of the same voices of people who showed up in the TV series, Vic Perrin, Peggy Weber, Virginia Gregg, etc. When I listened to your podcast of The Big Little Jesus recently, I was surprised that the two scripts were virtually identical. Something tells me that the 50s TV version must have been also." Yes, those scripts were exactly identical, and you find the same thing when they did 22 Rifle for Christmas. They used exact same scripts, just different actors. The only thing that ever changed was the names. And yeah, for the actors, yeah, you'll find that, because what Jack Webb did differently than a lot of hosts, when the shows went to TV, they got rid of a lot of the actors who were, shall we say, you know, less than physically spectacular. But Webb actually, he kept his radio actors in work, and they were on his, on the TV show, and that's created a lot of loyalty between Jack Webb and the people who worked with him. So that was something that was very, you know, very much one of Webb's strong points. She writes, "That's my next goal, to obtain DVD or VHS tapes of that series. I actually ran across a DVD of 3 episodes at Walmart the other day for the princely sum of $1. Needless to say, I snapped it up. It was labeled Volume 3, so I'm going to search for the other volumes as well." There's actually a set out that has 25 episodes in it, and they have most of the available episodes. I think there may be 5 or 6 that are not in that set, but it's a fairly comprehensive set, and it runs about $25. And it's nice, so that way you can kind of get everything in a way you can hear it. When you're buying these sets, this is from the email. When you're buying these sets from individually, because all these are in the public domain, some of these volumes, there's just no rhyme or reason about them. So I encourage you there to get the 25-episode set. It's actually pretty nice. Thanks again for your work on the podcast, Sandy. Well, thanks, Sandy. The other podcast I got was a concern about the audio quality. We've gotten a few of these. And what I'm going to try and do here from here on out is because I'm recording this, as we're doing this live, I'm actually recording on a backup system. So what you're going to get when you download this, once I get everything spliced together, is you're going to get the sound of me doing the commentary with the actual episode as I have it bunched in the middle. It can be a little bit of a challenge. We're dealing with some old recordings with old technology. It's and that can be challenging to hear anyway. But when we're recording the version that's been played, say over TalkShoe or something, that can cause some issues as well. So we're going to do, this will probably be the last thing I can think of that I can that I can think of to further address the issue. So, again, I appreciate everybody who's stuck with us despite the audio difficulties. I also encourage everybody, please cast your vote for us on Podcast Alley. And we actually have a comment on Podcast Alley I will save for after the break, because we're a little bit into the show anyway, and we'll get started, and we'll read that after we just before we get to the Johnny Madero episode. So here is Dragnet, and this is an anniversary episode. We haven't done quite a year here yet. The reason for that mainly being that we don't have all the episodes that they did. Plus, we took a couple episodes out of order. There was, you know, one situation where we played Jack Webb on the Bob Hope Show. So we're not quite a year, but for them, it's been a year. 52 straight weeks of recording as we get started with this episode here. The big press here on the old-time Dragnet show.
Tonight through the facilities of your local national broadcasting company station. We were privileged to enjoy your attention at the premiere broadcast of a new series of authentic documented dramas entitled Dragnet. This evening, on the occasion of our first anniversary as weekly guests in your home, the cast, technicians, and producers of Dragnet wish to state publicly that our indebtedness is enormous. For the degree of success which Dragnet has achieved during the past year, our first and greatest obligation is to you, our weekly listeners, for your support, for your many kind letters of encouragement, criticism, and appraisal. If Dragnet is a proven success, then you have made it so. Behind the scenes, we have many more people to thank: our engineers, our sound technicians, our cast. To the radio editors and columnists across the nation, also, a sincere thank you for your judgment of our efforts. Additionally, claims on our thanks are held by the Los Angeles Police Department, for the National Broadcasting Company, and the Liggett & Myers Tobacco Company, makers of Fatima cigarettes. To all of these, and to you, our gratitude. Here at the starting point of Dragnet's second year of broadcasting, our wish is twofold. First, that we may enjoy your continued support. Secondly, that we may deserve that support. Thank you. The story you are about to hear is true. Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Fatima Cigarettes, best of all long cigarettes, brings you Dragnet.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned to robbery detail. Scores of lone women have been beaten and robbed. The victims have been unable to identify the criminals. Your job, get them.
Documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Monday, July 1st. It was mild in Los Angeles. We're working the night watch out of robbery detail. My partner's Ben Romero. The boss is Ed Walker, captain of robbery. My name's Friday. It was 9:27 p.m. when I left the phone booth at the Sunset Drive-In and got to our car. ADK. Anything new?
Yeah,
well, Captain Walker's wife had her baby. Boy, 8 pounds.
Oh, that's swell. She all right?
Yeah, so does the captain.
Look at the uniform on the waitress, Jimmy.
Yeah, they sure dress them up, don't they?
Good evening.
Hi, Daisy.
Oh, hello. Didn't recognize you. What do you have? The usual?
No, I think I'll have something else besides a hamburger this time.
Here's the menu. Take a charge.
Hey, thanks. Well, I'm kind of hungry. Maybe I'll take a meal.
Mm-hmm.
Fried shrimp's good.
Where's that?
Right there.
Oh, yeah. 95 cents.
What's all this stuff I've been reading in the paper?
Huh? What's that?
A couple of guys going around snatching purses and beating up women. Oh. Paper says it's happened 7 times in the last 2 weeks.
Roast beef, 90 cents.
Roast beef's good, too. Don't you know who's been doing it?
No, not yet. What do you get with these liver and onions, Dave?
Well, just everything else. Soup, potatoes, and coffee.
85 cents.
How could just take the purse? Why do they have to beat up the women?
We don't know.
Well, there's headlines staring me in the face every time I open a paper. I'm getting afraid to walk home at night.
Do you get coffee and dessert with the Salisbury steak?
Yeah.
65 cents.
Sending you, Jean. Roger on your call.
Hey, do you guys know what I've been talking about?
Yeah, Daisy, we know.
I'll take the Salisbury steak.
Yeah, so will I.
Hamburger special, down too.
Well done on mine, please.
Burn. Okay. Be a couple of minutes.
Thanks.
All units in the vicinity of 10116 North Maquette. That's us. 484 PS and slugging. No. All units in the vicinity of 10116 North McCadden, 484 PS and slugging, code 3. If you want to have to take the call, okay?
I'll let her know we're going.
Okay.
I'll be right there.
No, we're leaving. We'll be back.
Okay.
You know, I've been wondering.
What's that?
Hamburger and Salisbury steak, what's the difference?
Price.
To the police officer, the lowest thief and most cowardly is the purse snatcher who preys on women. For more than a month, lone women throughout the western section of the city have been robbed and beaten. The descriptions were confused and varied because the attacks took place at night. 10.06 p.m. We got to the location on North McCadden where a woman was lying on the sidewalk. She'd been badly beaten about the face and neck, and her jaw had been broken. Officers Reed and Shell of Unit 61F were already there.
Any witnesses, officer?
Yeah, this man in the sweater here saw it happen. Says the victim's name's Swanson. This is Mr. Kahn.
How do you do? This is Sergeant Romero. My name's Friday. I wonder if we could talk to you, please.
Yeah, certainly. You want to come into the house?
Right over here will be all right.
That officer there said that you saw it happen.
That's right. I was watching television. I heard this scream outside. I looked out and saw these two men beating her up.
Can you describe them?
The light wasn't real good.
Right,
they're about as tall as you two, but they had slighter builds.
How old were they? Could you see that?
I'd say they were young, maybe 18, 19. I saw them knock her down. It was terrible. They hit her and then they kicked her. They picked up the purse and ran down that way.
And you called the police?
Yes, but not right away. I ran out and saw them get in a car across the street. They drove right past me. Then they turned east there on Romaine.
Can you describe the car for
us? I got the license number for you. The last three numbers were 552.
Just three numbers?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Can you describe the car? What kind was it?
Oh, I don't know. It was new. I think it was black. Maybe a sedan.
Well, was it a large car or a small one?
Oh, kind of medium.
Did you notice the back of it?
Yeah, that's where I saw the license plate.
No, I mean, did you notice anything about the car? Maybe a dent on the fender or a sticker on the window?
No, I didn't look at the window.
Did the car have a spotlight or a radio antenna?
Well, I guess I didn't see any. I was trying to look at the license plates.
Did you notice anything unusual about the car? Any identifying marks at all?
No, I didn't notice.
How about the make of the car? Did you see what kind it was?
No, the last three numbers on the license plate were 552.
California license plate?
Yes, it was. That should be enough here. Do you think you'll catch him tonight?
Do you know how many plates end in 552? While Ben called in a general description of the car and the two attackers, I talked to the other bystanders. I found out that the victim's name was Mrs. Frieda K. Swanson, a widow. She had a room at 1003 North McCadden. None of the neighbors had seen the robbery or the beating take place. 11:28 p.m., Ben and I arrived at Hollywood Receiving Hospital to interview Mrs. Swanson, but she was unable to talk or to identify her attackers. She wrote on a piece of paper that she'd been slugged from behind. She never got a good look at the man. Besides a broken jaw, she was suffering from a fractured wrist, a broken nose, and bruises about the face and body. Tuesday, July 2nd, the getaway car used in the attack on the previous night was found abandoned on Hollywood Boulevard and proved to be a stolen car. License number 6Young4552. The victim's empty purse was found inside. Routine investigation developed no leads. We met with Captain Walker. Because the last four attacks had taken place within a six-block radius, we set up a plan of decoys in an attempt to trap the two purse snatchers. Four policewomen from Juvenile Bureau and a special detail from Metropolitan Division were assigned. Tuesday, 4 p.m., a special detail was ordered to the squad room for briefing.
Oh, hiya, Dorothy.
How's your tuxedo back in mothballs?
Yeah. How are your feet?
My feet. Nothing the matter with them. You're a good dancer.
Yeah, I bet I could use some lessons.
Oh, you don't need lessons, Joe. You need practice.
Okay, let's get started. I don't have to tell you the risks involved in an operation like this. I want all of you to know where everybody will be at any given time. By all of you, I mean the police women and also the men who will be in the squad car. If anybody misses anything, stop me. We don't have much of a description of the men we're after. There are two of them, both about 18 years old. Usually they wear sneakers, slacks, and sport coats. They've been in different kinds of cars, all of them stolen. We keep each car for a few days and ditch it. Pull down the map, will you, Joe?
Yes, sir.
Now, here's the area here. Residential, 90% of the dwellings have garages, so for cars parked on the street, it might be unused. Each of you will be given a list of cars stolen in the last 48 hours, still outstanding. I want you to check all parked cars against the hot sheet. First, hold up your purses, please. Young lady, that purse is too small, I'm afraid. Let's make it look worthwhile.
Yes, sir.
All right. Of course, you won't be carrying your guns in your purse. You wear a shoulder holster. Before you leave, Sergeant Friday will pass out some marked bills I want you to carry. Okay, now, policewoman Short, you'll board a westbound streetcar at Western and Santa Monica Boulevard at 9.03 p.m. Don't worry about these schedules. The streetcar will be there. You get off at Las Palmas at 9.13, walk south to Willoughby. Turn east on Willoughby to Hudson, and north one block to Romaine. You go west on Romaine to Cahuenga, then retrace your steps at the starting point, and you're through. Got it? You'll be covered by Unit 81K.
Captain.
Yep.
How fast or slow should we walk?
Oh, I'd say a pretty good pace. No woman likes to be alone on the streets at night, so it'd be natural.
Yes, sir.
Policewoman Ball.
Yes, sir.
You'll board an eastbound bus at La Brea and Melrose at 9.35 p.m. You get off at Wilcox and Melrose at 9.45. Walk north on Wilcox to Waring, then west on Waring for two blocks, and north on Cherokee. Mm-hmm. Follow Cherokee for two blocks, turn east on Romaine.
Mm-hmm.
Follow Romaine to Cole, and turn north on Cole. When you get to Santa Monica Boulevard, retrace your steps to your starting point. You'll be covered by Unit 87K.
Will the cars be cruising or will they be parked?
Both. Friday and Romero will be cruising all the time. I'll get to the others when I finish with these instructions. Of course, if you see any police car, give no recognition.
Yes, sir.
Captain.
Yeah?
You said the two suspects wear sneakers?
That's right.
It'd be pretty hard to hear them come up behind you.
I'd say so.
Did any of the victims hear them?
If they had, they wouldn't be victims.
P.M. The decoy plan went into effect. We waited. Tuesday night passed. Nothing happened. Wednesday night, nothing. Thursday, July 4th, the decoy plan was enlarged to include a larger area, but everything was quiet. Friday, July 5th, Captain Walker decided that the new plan covering an area from La Brea to Vine Street and from Sunset to Beverly would be kept in operation. 10:45 p.m., Ben and I cruised the exposed area.
We've been thinking about moving to a new place.
Yeah?
Only trouble is we don't know what's going to happen.
You mean if rent control goes off?
Yeah. We don't know if rent will go up or down.
He's got a lease, hasn't he?
71
next month.
Next month.
We don't know what to do. We even talked to Coyne to decide.
Well, that's about as good a way as any.
Coyne came up tails four times in a row.
Yeah?
Wife changed her mind on each toss. No decision.
Roger, 71R.
Is that a policewoman down there?
Yeah. Nancy Short. You got her out there?
South on Hudson, east on Melrose, then up Wilcox to Sunset.
All units, Willoughby and Hudson, 484 PS and Slugging, code
3. That's right, let's roll on it.
83F, Willoughby and Hudson, 484 PS and Slugging, code 3.
We drove to Willoughby and Hudson, just south of the corner, and saw a woman sitting on the grass with a few people around. She was a young woman, about 25. Her clothes had been torn, and there was a red weld on her right cheekbone. She was trying to get to her feet as we came up.
There'll be an ambulance here in a few minutes, miss. Can you tell us how it happened?
My cheek's swelling.
Did you see who attacked
her? Yes, I did. I can tell you about them. Look, here, I ripped off one of their pockets. Cards fell off.
Mm-hmm. Driver's license.
George Landon.
It's a piece of cloth I tore off his pocket.
I'll take that, Ben. Thank you. You want to stay with her? See if I can get a make on this license.
Yeah, okay. Would you give me your name, please?
Barbara Curtis. I live over on Hudson.
ADK to Control 1. 8OK to Control 1.
Go ahead, ADK.
Check suspect for making warrants. George Landon, male, white, age 18, 5 feet 9 inches, 155 pounds, blue eyes, black hair. Address, 2722 and a half, Arthur Avenue, KMA 367.
Roger, ADK.
By a couple of young men. Did you
see the car? Yes, I saw it. White sidewall tires. It was a club coupe. I tried to see the license plate. I couldn't make it out.
What color was the car? I don't know. Dark
green, I think. Uncle Maddox Boyle.
Can you describe the men?
Well, you got the driver's license. It's all there.
Well, that's just one of them, miss. You said there were two men.
I don't know. I grabbed one of their coats and the other one hit me.
Mm-hmm.
The thing I'm so mad about is I tried to scream and nothing had come out.
I understand.
Hi. You're the 63F. We got the call.
That's fine. This is the victim, Miss Curtis. If you'll handle the report and see that she gets home, we got a lead to check out here.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
What's your call back, Gil?
We better get on.
Right with you.
ADK to Control 1. Go ahead.
ADK. Suspect has misdemeanor and felony record. One arrest, suspicion of robbery, and one arrest, GTA. No wants at this time. Most recent address on suspect, 2722 and one half, Arthur Avenue.
Roger.
Been in trouble before. Felony and misdemeanor.
Yep.
And the address matches.
Maybe this cloth does.
Listening to Dragnet, the case history of a police investigation presented in the public interest by Fatima Cigarettes.
Friday, 11 p.m. Ben and I drove to 2722 and a half Arthur Avenue. It was a small house at the rear of a lot on the east end of town. Alongside the front house, there was a narrow passageway leading to the house in the back with a small lawn between the two. There was no alley. And anybody leaving from the front or back door had to go through the narrow passage. As we approached the house, a light was on in the front room, and through the window we could see a middle-aged woman reading a magazine. We rang the bell.
Yes?
Police officer. Does George Landon live here?
Why, yes, he does. I'm Miss Agnes Landon. What do you want?
Can we come in?
Why, yes.
Thank you.
Won't you sit down?
Thank you, ma'am.
Is George Landon at home now?
No, he isn't, but I think he'll be home soon. He never stays out late. He isn't in any trouble, is he?
You know where he is?
With his friends, I suppose. He's a popular boy. He really should be home soon.
Where has he been, Miss Landon?
I don't know. He goes out at night, you know, with his friends.
Who are they?
Well, I really don't know. You see, it's difficult to keep track of a young boy.
Mm-hmm.
He's a big boy. He's full of vitality. He has to find things to do.
Yes, ma'am.
He lives here with me. I'm his aunt. I'm not married, so I take care of him. His parents died when he was a baby.
I see. Does George work, or does he go to school?
Oh, he's finished school. You aren't here about that automobile that was stolen a year ago, are you?
No, ma'am.
He had some trouble then, but I'm sure he didn't do it. Since then, he's been very good. He hasn't missed a day's work, and he goes to church with me any time I ask him.
Where does he spend his evenings, do you know?
Well, I told you, with his friends. A young man has to use up his energy. I don't try to hold him too tightly. Good boy like him.
Can we look at his room?
Oh, yes. It's right here.
All right.
I'll show you how neat it is. Right there. Isn't that nice?
Yes, ma'am.
I'm not trying to defend him. I'm only telling you about him. He keeps this room cleaned up himself. He smokes a little, but I've never smelled a drop of liquor on his breath. He's a very good boy.
Yes, ma'am.
He even reads a lot. You can see his books over there.
Yes, ma'am.
You mind if we look around a little?
No. No, that's all right. Should be home soon. He's probably at a movie. Do you want to wait for him?
No, it won't be necessary.
He's always home by midnight. I'll tell him you were here. Oh, that must be George now. George!
Yeah?
These men would like to talk to you. They're police officers.
All right, take it easy, young fellow.
Well, let go. Hold him. Turn him around.
Yep.
Stand still, young fellow. No gun.
What do you guys think you're doing? I didn't do anything. I was just out for a ride.
This your nephew?
Yeah.
Coat's torn, Joe. Pocket ripped off.
Is this your driver's license here, George?
Yeah. I lost it.
When?
Last week.
It was found tonight.
So what?
How'd you tear your coat?
Getting out of the car the other night.
Here's a piece of cloth. The girl who was attacked tonight gave it to us. It matches the tear there in your coat.
What have you done, George?
Tell her.
I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to do it any time. He talked me into it.
Who talked you into
it? He made me do it. He's got a gun and he stole the cars. He made all the plans.
Who made all the plans?
Well, Tommy. Oh, we never did anything except hang out at the drugstore until that time a year ago.
What's his last name?
He said that it'd always be held against me and I better go along with him.
Tommy who?
Decker.
Was he with you tonight?
Yeah, he's the one that hit her when she grabbed hold of me. He's the one that always hit him. I never wanted him to do it.
Mm-hmm. Where's the stuff you took out of that purse?
Well, Tommy's going to hide it.
Where?
Back of where he works.
Where's that?
Oh, garage someplace. I don't know where. He just started working there.
Where does he live?
Place on West 6th. I never been there.
What does this Decker look like?
Well, same age I am, but about an inch taller and must be 15 pounds heavier. He's got dark hair.
How's he dressed?
Just like me. Sneakers and brown slacks and a tan sport coat.
Better call the office, babe.
Yeah. Can I use your telephone, ma'am?
Oh, it's in the hall behind the door.
Thank you.
You said Decker's got a gun?
Yeah.
Officer, will you tell me the truth?
I'll try, ma'am.
Are George and this Tommy Decker the two men the papers have been writing about?
I'm afraid so.
The ones who've been robbing the women?
Yes, ma'am.
And beating them up?
Yeah.
I didn't mean it. I didn't know what I was doing.
I raised you, George. I didn't either.
p.m. We checked into the office with the 18-year-old suspect, George Landon. While Ben and the police stenographer took down the statement, I went down to R&I and pulled a package on the other suspect, Thomas Decker. His mama sheet showed a petition had been filed on 459 PC and 488 PC. They also showed three different recent addresses for Decker. One on West 6th Street, one on South Mariposa, and a third on North Catalina. Two units were dispatched to the first two addresses. Ben and I went to the address on North Catalina, a rooming house. We learned from Decker's landlady that he was working as an apprentice mechanic on the swing shift at a large garage on South Flower Street. 12:51 a.m., Ben and I arrived at the garage.
I beg your pardon.
Yeah?
Police officer. Does Thomas Decker work here?
Yeah, he works here.
Thank you.
Who you want?
You, Thomas Decker?
Yeah?
Police officer. Like to talk to you.
Watch it, Joe.
Come on.
Yeah. Hey, he's going in the locker room.
All right.
It's locked.
Come on, hit him.
Yeah. No go. Hey, you. You over there. Any other way out of this locker room?
Yeah, down the hall in the annex.
Come on, Ben.
All right.
Here we are.
Watch it! Came from behind that car, back by the door.
All right, cover me.
All right, Ben, give it back to him. Throw your gun out! Throw it out!
Here it is! Don't shoot!
Right, now come on out. Hands behind your head.
I'll get the gun. All right, you turn around.
Lousy! Watch it, Joe, watch it! Hey, get in the way!
Head him off downstairs.
No! There he goes! Cut him off!
Let him go! Let him
All right, get the cuffs on him, Ben.
Yeah, yeah. 18 years old. What's it prove?
I don't know. Sometimes you kind of wonder if it's true.
What's that?
There's no such thing as a bad boy.
The story you have just heard was true. Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent.
On November 1st, trial was held in Superior Court, Department 82, City and County of Los Angeles, State of California. In a moment, the results of that trial. Thomas Decker and George Landon were tried and convicted on 5 counts of grand theft person, 5 counts of grand theft auto, and 5 counts of assault with intent to do great bodily harm. They were sentenced to the state penitentiary for a term as prescribed by law and are now serving their sentence.
Ladies and gentlemen, Chief of Police W.A. Wharton speaking from his office in City Hall, Los Angeles, California.
As Chief of Police of the City of Los Angeles, I wish to extend my heartiest congratulations to the program Dragnet on the occasion of its first anniversary. The overwhelming success of this program, as indicated by the hundreds of commendatory letters, telegrams, and personal comments, I feel has been due to the splendid job of portraying police officers and their work. The American public, by its enthusiastic acceptance of Dragnet, has indicated a desire for factual police programs. The Los Angeles Police Department is proud to contribute to the constructive entertainment of both adults and children through this medium. May I extend my best wishes to the National Broadcasting Company, the sponsor, the actors, the writer, and the producer of Dragnet. And I trust there will be many more years of continued success for this program.
Just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice for Dragnet comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.A. Wharton, Los Angeles Police Department.
Fatima Cigarettes, best of all long cigarettes, has brought you Dragnet, transcribed from Los Angeles. Next, the great new show, Sarah's Private Caper on NBC.
Welcome back here on the Old Time Dragnet Show. You kind of get a picture there of how important this show really was. You have the chief of police of Los Angeles coming on the radio to actually command the show. It's somewhat remarkable. We would never see that type of thing today. And there are a few shows that actually have been as important and groundbreaking as what Dragnet accomplished here. Of course, there are some very interesting things in this episode. You know, what I noticed here when we got into the garage scene, this is the one thing that really where Webb stands out. Sometimes on other shows, the actors walk in. Quote-unquote, and you really can't tell the difference. You know, it's the talking heads, it's the conversation. Unless it plays a part in the show, you know, a direct plot point, you don't really see a lot here. They walked into that garage, and you heard this hum of machinery. You had this idea, this is a garage, and they made that come to life. I think that's part of the realism that was so important to Jack Webb. And of course, the other thing that they made the point of, in a way, because this was educational, when it came to the guy who, he had the last 3 digits of the license plate number. And you know, they're like, hey, I've got the last three parts of the license plate number. And there, you're going to be able to find him. It's like, okay, you don't have any idea how many license plates in 252. Kind of to suggest, you know, what you should be looking for if you are an accident, you know, if you witness a crime, if you're going to want to be helpful to police, you're going to want as many details as possible, because that's going to be key rather than just the license plate number, because if you can get the complete one, that can provide a match, but that's problematic, you know, in a case like this, where it's theft that's occurring. So, you know, again, the educational aspects continue. And this was, you know, this was a fairly interesting episode with police women decoys, which are very popular on this show. All right, I want to go ahead and share a brief comment here. Grew up in the L.A. area. This is on PodcastAlley.com, and watched the 60-70 series. Now enjoying the radio version via your podcast. Thanks for making it available. And that's from S Warren 239. And if you enjoy the program, please cast a vote for us on Podcast Alley. It is certainly not necessary to leave a comment, but we appreciate the vote. PodcastAlley.com. Just put Dragnet in the search bar. We are currently number 131 among all podcasts, which is, which all things considered is pretty decent, but we definitely like to have more people listening. All right, well, about once a quarter now, we are going to listen to other Jack Webb shows, and we're going to split the second show up into two parts. This month, we're doing Johnny Madero, Pier 23. And for those of you who may have missed last week's show, I'll go ahead and I'll bring you up to speed. Johnny Madero, Jack Webb's character, was hired as a private investigator to find Pete Sutro, his client. Mr. Finley hired him because he was hearing the name Pete Sutro in his dreams, but he has no clue. He has no clue what the name is or what it means. But he's paying Johnny Madero the princely sum of $50 a day. Johnny Madero, but Mr. Finley's wife pays off Madero to drop the case for $500. Meanwhile, somebody who had been asking questions about Pete Sutro as well, is found murdered, and the San Francisco PD has got an idea on the suspect, Johnny Madero. As we come in, Madero has just been to Father Leahy, the jack of all trades, who basically has agreed to look into it. He's somebody who gathers a lot of information, and for the most part, in this detective series, Father Leahy does a lot of the actual detective work away from what we see. While Johnny Madero gets into a lot of fights. So, as we get into this, somebody mentioned too that this actually did appear in an episode of Pat Novak for Hire, the priest did. So I find it, you know, interesting that with Webb, a lot of his shows tended to build on each other, which makes this kind of interesting. So let's go ahead. I think we're all Madero is a police suspect at this point, but they let him go, and he's continuing to investigate this, and right now as we start, he's going to ask someone who had been identified as an old flame of Sutro. So let's go ahead and get started here. This is again the Johnny Madero show, one of two episodes in existence. I wanted to mention this very quickly as we get started. There's actually somebody I saw who was selling a CD with six episodes of Johnny Madero on it. Please, there are only two in existence. When I looked at it, what they actually did is they took three different recordings of the same two episodes, and they went ahead and they sold it as a six-episode disc. So please be aware, there are only two episodes of Johnny Madero, should you be interested in purchasing or downloading it. All right, so with that proviso, let's go ahead and get started on Johnny Madero.
When I left Father Leahy, I knew I still had one base to tag. It was Sutro's ex-flame, a doll named Evelyn Day. I drove down to Eddy Street and I parked near the Jade Club. Well, it's not a bad place, but on a slow night, even the winos are afraid to go in. Inside, it was dark enough to hide the decimal point on a check, and over by the bar, there was a piano playing music that nobody was listening to. And then Evelyn came out. And right off, he started hunting for the nearest fire exit. She had red hair about this side of 98 degrees, and she wore a black evening gown that held up by one strap and a prayer. She was the kind of a girl who could wear a Mother Hubbard and make it look like a negligee. And when she sang, it came out low enough to strike oil. After she was through, I asked the bartender to give her a message. She walked over to me, and she wasn't happy one way or the other.
Are you the man who wanted me?
One of them. You're Evelyn, huh?
Yeah. What'll it lead to?
A crisis if you don't sit down.
All right. You've got me interested. Now, what's on your mind that we can talk about?
My name's Madero. Now, let's start with a friend named Pete Sutro.
Let's continue. What do you want to know about him?
Where is he?
Are you a cop, or will you pay for the right answer?
I need too many of them, baby. I'm way out ahead in a murder derby, and I'll pitch homicide anybody I can get.
What do you want Sutro for?
I think he shot Marty King.
Someone should have. But you're betting on the wrong horse.
You're prejudiced. Sutro was your boyfriend.
That's right. He was my boyfriend. But I haven't seen him lately.
All right, then. What was the last thing you did with him?
I'll read my diary to you someday.
Now, look, baby, you got a choice. I'm going to rough you up or let the pros do it.
Let go of my Armadero. Or I'll call a bouncer.
Call Sutro. Now, start talking before I bruise you up good.
Slow down, Madero. You're out of my weight class.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what you want to know.
Should I take notes, or is this going to be quick?
I don't know. Depends on how sentimental I get.
That's all right. I got a handkerchief.
Okay, I'll tell you. I used to be Pete Sutro's girl in Detroit. Then one day he skipped out and left me hanging on the vine.
Don't worry, baby. You haven't withered yet.
I started looking for him, and so did Kane.
Why Kane?
He and Pete had a deal together. Pete ran out with all the dough.
Your boy should have run for Congress. He's got a nice record. What kind of a deal did he have with Kane?
I don't remember.
All of a sudden, huh?
I'm shy when it comes to strangers. Let's just end it by saying Pete disappeared.
Let's say you're dummying up.
I love Pete, and I wouldn't want anything to happen to him.
Do you carry a picture with that torch, baby?
Sure. Want to see? Here's a snapshot of Pete in my locket. Do you know him?
Not this season, no.
I want him back. He was a good guy.
Yeah, your boy worked up a lot of people. He made number one nightmare for a guy named Nat Finley.
I heard. And I want to see Finley, too.
You saw me, miss. But I want to talk to Madero.
Hello, Finley.
I got to see you alone, Madero. And I got to see you now.
You lost your option. I'm freelancing again.
Well, you can't walk out on me.
This is going to hurt, fella. Your wife paid me to drop the job.
That's what I got to talk to you about, Madero. I think she wants to drop me, too.
Finley grabbed me by the arm, and you could tell he was scared. His jaw was shut tighter than a wall safe, and his Adam's apple rode up and down like a yo-yo. Evelyn wanted to compare notes with him on Sutro, but right now Finley was as friendly as a no-limit poker game. He hustled me out of the Jade and into a waiting cab. He wouldn't say anything because of the driver, so he sat in one corner, rubbing his hands and looking straight ahead. When we got to the office, Finley paid the bill, and we went up the ramp. Inside, he had a little trouble getting started, like a big family leaving on a picnic, and then he got his voice.
I'm in a bad spot, Madero. I need help.
Have you tried classified?
I'm trying you. I tell you, my wife's out to get me. She keeps telling me I'm crazy. She's trying to talk me into it.
A lot of wives feel that way, Finley. She'll get over it.
Yeah? Well, I, Madero, she's trying to send me to an asylum. She and Sutro.
You got enough worries to start a peace conference. What brings Sutro back into the headlines?
I found a letter in Sheila's purse. Kane wanted $10,000 from Sheila to keep quiet about Sutro.
All right, quit crowding me with ghosts. So your wife had a past.
And she and Sutro have a future unless you help me, I tell you. I tell you, Sutro's behind the whole thing. He and my wife must know each other, and they're trying to get rid of me.
You're getting a complex, Finley. Slow down.
Well, you got to help me.
Well, who's going to help me? I got a murder rap to beat.
Well, but I'll clear you, Madero. I'll clear you if you help me now.
You couldn't clear your own throat in an empty tunnel. What makes you 8 feet tall?
This gun in my hand.
Well, stop pointing it, fella. You're too nervous to aim.
Well, you don't understand, Madero. I'm not pointing it at you. I'm giving it to you. This is the gun that killed Kane.
You were there when it happened?
No, but either my wife or Sutro was.
When did you dream that up?
An hour ago. I found it in my wife's closet. Two slugs are missing, and I got a feeling it killed Kane.
Send it to homicide. They'll let you know who did it by return mail.
I can't, Madero. I can't just yet. I don't know whether Sheila or Sutro did it. I got a feeling inside. You've got to find Sutro, or he'll end up killing me yet.
That's a prediction?
Wait a minute. It's Someone's coming down the hall. Hide the gun, Madero. They're after me now.
Yeah.
They got the light fuse.
Lay low. They're aiming for something bigger.
What are you going to do, Madero?
Just waiting for something to happen.
Ooh! Madero. Madero. I guess it happened.
Somebody turned a flashlight in my eyes and then hit a four-bagger. If they hung around, they could have seen me do a couple of quick quivers a chorus girl would have been proud of. I laid there in the dark for a while, and if you're going to look messy, a blackout isn't a bad place to do it. After a while, I tried to get up, but my stomach felt as empty as a horse laugh at a funeral. I sprawled out again, and I tried to figure how a name like Pete Sutro could start so much pain. Then the lights went on. They should have stayed off, because Warchek was breathing over me like a steam engine with a broken heart.
Hello, Madero. Does the light bother your eyes?
Yeah, Warchek. Get out of it.
Get used to it. It's a lot stronger down at headquarters. Tell me about the gun on the floor.
I heard you were coming. I wanted to commit suicide.
You didn't try hard enough. Just got a phone tip that said you had the gun to kill Marty Kane. Hand it to me.
All right, copper. I'll make it easy for you. Finley left the gun here before somebody sapped me.
Uh-huh. Who's somebody? Don't any of your friends have names?
Sure. Check with Finley. He was here when it happened.
It was dark, Madero. How did he see? With an electric eye?
I don't know. Maybe he smelled his wife's perfume. Look her up, too.
She's that interesting, huh?
Kane used to think so.
What do you mean?
It was blackmailing her.
Look, Madero, a grocery list is blackmail to you. I'll put you on the inside.
Finley found a letter in her purse. Kane wanted $10,000 to keep quiet about Sutro.
Finley told you all about it, huh?
He can't keep a family secret.
And the wife tumbled Kane to keep him quiet. Is that the idea?
Well, this is your good day, Warchek. Find Sutro now, and you've licked the whole thing.
No, you find him, Madero, and we'll give you a reward.
You're too generous. What's the pitch?
Sutro's wanted for a payroll robbery in Detroit. He's been out of sight for a year now.
He hasn't been out of mind, though. Finley thinks his wife is carrying on a sideline with him.
Look, Madero, I talk to your boy, Finley. He's got enough dreams to start a mattress factory. I don't believe him, I don't believe you.
You don't believe the world is round. Take stock, Warchek, and start learning.
Yeah, I will. Let's see how much the fingerprints on this gun teach me. If you've got a story, I'll stay after school.
You'll still wear the dunce cap.
That's all right, Madero. There'll be a badge on it.
Warchek wrapped the gun up in a handkerchief, and if it killed Marty Kane, I might as well start writing letters to the governor. The gun was a plant, but I had about as much chance of selling that to Warchek as a pair of short pants to a reform school. Warchek stood there and smiled, and then he walked out. Ah, there were a lot of questions again, like who sapped him, and did Finley really have a story? The more I thought about it, the more snarled it got, and then the phone rang. Yeah.
Hello, Johnny. This is Father Leahy. Are you still free?
Yeah, but I'm breathing hard. How'd you make out?
Fine, Johnny. I sold 10 raffle tickets.
What'd you find out?
Warchek just got a teletype. Sutro pulled a payroll robbery in Detroit. They think Marty Kane helped him.
Well, that figures. What else?
Sutro and the doe are supposed to be somewhere in town.
Yeah, even the bloodhounds are worried. How does Sheila figure?
She and a girl named Evelyn were both in love with Sutro. But rumor has it that Sutro's favorite was Evelyn.
What about Finley?
Sheila must have got tired of sharecropping, so she settled for Finley. They both came in from Detroit about a year ago.
But, Father, it's still fuzzy. Marty Kane was blackmailing Sheila because of Sutro. There must be a tie.
Evelyn's asking the same question, and she thinks Sheila knows the answers. She's on her way to the Finley place for a showdown.
Thanks, Father. I'll tag along and grab a seat on the sidelines.
It'll be a free-for-all if those two girls tangle.
Don't worry, Father. They won't get in my hair.
Don't be too sure. Samson had trouble with one girl.
When Father Leahy hung up, all the pieces began to fall into place. All but one. Where was Sutro? He was around somewhere, but it was like throwing a headlock on a shadow. I grabbed a cab out to the Stafford Arms, and when I got there, the doorman looked at me as if I'd just blown up an orphan. I took the elevator and got off on the sixth floor. And then I leaned on the doorbell, and Sheila answered. She was wearing a pair of rose-colored lounging pajamas, and I've seen baked potatoes with looser jackets. She must have been surprised, but she didn't blink an eyelash.
Are you pausing or opposing, Mr. Madero?
I'm looking for trap doors.
Oh, I thought you were going to look that way. Come inside.
Yeah.
Now bring that gleam in your eye over to the fireplace. We'll warm it up a little.
It won't look good in company.
Why? Who's company?
Evelyn's a little late. She got tied up sharpening her claws.
Evelyn who?
Hold out, baby. She's got a better question than that.
Like what?
Like, where's Pete Sutro? The key sounds like a friend.
That's too early. That's probably my husband, Matt.
Oh, hello, Madero. Glad you're here. Somebody's been following me.
Oh, you're dreaming again, darling.
You see? What did I tell you? It wasn't a dream. That must be her.
Hello, Sheila. Remember me?
You must have the wrong place, lady.
That's the right idea. I want Pete Sutro back.
You want too much.
I'll grab anyway. I've come for Pete, Sheila.
You came too late. He's dead. Pete Sutro died 2 years ago in Detroit. You hear me? He's dead.
Not dead enough. You're lying, Sheila. Pete Sutro is standing right behind you.
What do you mean? That's my husband. That's Matt.
So you gave him another name and another face. But you can't give him another voice. That's Pete Sutro.
What are you talking about? What are you saying? I'm not Pete Sutro.
Don't you remember me, Pete? I'm Evelyn. Oh, what did they do to your face, darling?
My face? I was in an accident. It's hard to remember things.
Remember the payroll robbery, Pete? You were supposed to come back to me.
Payroll robbery? There was an accident. And I was hurt. I can't remember anything else. It's so hard to think. Well, you were there, Sheila. What happened?
Go ahead, Sheila. Tell him what happened. Tell him that he's Pete Sutro. Tell him that you stole him from me. Tell him that you killed Marty Kane.
All right, Evelyn. I'll tell it to you first. It was a good campaign, but I'm voting you down.
Put away
now.
The gun. He won't stand for it.
He's henpecked now.
What are you doing, Sheila? You'll hurt him.
I'll try.
You shot him. You shot... Evelyn.
Pete. You remember me. She broke us up. For good. But you... You remembered me.
Yeah. Yeah. I remembered. Evelyn. I'm beginning to remember a lot of things now.
Then forget them, Ned. Just you and me now. We're married.
You are. You married a guy named Nat Finley.
Stay away from me, Nat. Nat.
Try Pete. See how it sounds. Give me the gun, baby.
Let go.
You killed Evelyn.
Let go. You didn't need her.
Not anymore. I got the gun now.
No, please, Nat. Please.
Tell me it's a dream, baby. Tell me I'm crazy.
You are, Nat. You are. Get out of my way. I'm getting out of here.
You're not quick enough.
Gun's empty now.
Yeah. So's everything. I'm tired, Mateo. Tired.
Hold out. It's going to be a long trip.
Yeah. I told you, Mateo. Pete Sutro was going to kill me in the end.
Yeah. You talked yourself into it. Warchek got the whole story the next morning. It seems that Sutro and Kane were in a big robbery in Detroit. The plan was for Sutro to carry all the dough and meet Kane and Evelyn at their hideout. But Sutro got smashed up in an auto accident and never made it. Sutro's face had to be remodeled, and when he lost his memory, Sheila made her pitch. She promoted a wedding and cut herself in on half the stolen cash. Changed his name to Nat Finley and brought him out to San Francisco. Kane and Evelyn got wind that Sutro had taken off to the coast, so they followed. They couldn't find him, and for a year, Sheila and Sutro got along without a hitch. And then Sutro began hearing his real name in his own mind, and before Sheila could do anything, I'd already shown her husband's check to Kane. He recognized Sutro's handwriting right away, and so he started to blackmail Sheila. He didn't make any yardage because Sheila stopped him with a .38. And then she tried to convince her husband that he was crazy. Evelyn won in the last round when she recognized Sutro's voice at the jade. It turned out that Sutro had been chasing himself until he caught himself. Well, Warchek asked only one question. How can a guy forget his own name? I don't know. A lot of hotels would like to know that, too.
Johnny Madero, Pier 23, starring Jack Webb as Johnny Madero, has been presented by the Mutual Network. Johnny Madero is written by Herb Margolis and Lou Morheim. Gail Gordon played Father Leahy. Bill Conrad played Inspector Warchek of Homicide. John Garfield played Nat Finley. Others in the cast were Gene Rogers, Joan Banks. Original music was composed and conducted by Harry Zimmerman, and the entire production was directed by Nat Wolf. Tony Lafrano.
This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Welcome back here on the Old Time Dragnet Show. That's Johnny Madero. That's the last time we'll probably look at that. Corey Asher in the chat room says, wow, that was a weird plot line. Not very good, though. Well, it was the best episode of Johnny Madero in existence. It was the most brilliant, well-written episode in existence. Remember, there are two. So, this is the best one. Doesn't say a whole lot. The big thing where this came in, is this is very much different from the Jack Webb, from the Dragnet role in a lot of ways. At least the Dragnet we heard on the radio. Andrea says this is why it didn't last long, but some of the characteristics did come. The tough guy, smart stuff did come back in the 1954 movie, particular one, where he has a ton of these liners. One-liners he delivers in the 54 motion picture very well. One that was kind of emblematic is he was coming to get a undercover policewoman out of a bar, and when he came in, this big guy stood up and he turns to him. He says, "Unless you're growing, sit down." I think he was using a little bit of those Johnny Madero skills in that particular role. But again, this was not his best program, and there are quite a few that were. That were better, and hopefully we will. We might open up an episode of Pat Novak next quarter. Well, for now, I thank everybody so much for listening. We will be back on next week with just a normal single episode of Dragnet. For now, I thank everybody so much for listening. This is Adam Graham signing off.